Jerry's. Welcome to What's Your Story. And thank you all so far for your support and for listening to this podcast. I hope so far our resource persons have inspired you enough. Also today we have another wonderful lady here with us, Augustina Osabute. I just hope I mentioned the name right. She is the founder of Teen Lead Foundation and currently a doctor of philosophy student focused in agricultural biosystems and mechanical engineering at South Dakota University. Ladies and gentlemen, just get ready. Get your pens and papers ready as Augustina walks us through her journey so far. Welcome, Augustina, and thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you very much, Liz, for the invitation.
You're welcome. Thank you once again for honoring it. Finally, because we've been scheduling this interview for a while now. Finally, I'm so excited. Okay. So, Augustina, could you tell us why you decided to pursue engineering?
Oh, okay. So, as we know, back in Ghana, during my time, so I'll say it that way, I think it's not changing. So, during my time, you didn't get a lot of ladies engineers, okay? So I really didn't have any idea about this engineering. And I went to Taka to live with my cousin. So I got to know about this mechanical engineering through her friends that were visiting her. And most of the times when I go to town and then I see the mining buses, it's either a whole bus, you only see like about three ladies getting out of the bus, or even you not see any lady getting out of the bus. So I was kind of curious and then asked them, so how many ladies do you have in your department? How many ladies? Some of them will tell you like, we don't have any lady in our department. Or like we have one lady, we have three ladies. And I was kind of, so what is this engineering about? Some of them explained it to me, but even at that time, I didn't get it so well. So I was in senior high school, secondary college. And you know, all of us want to be nurses and doctors. we take general science in the senior high school. So yeah, that was what I was going for. I was the infirmary prefect, what other school called dispensary prefect. And I was the Red Cross president for my school. So yeah, what I was going for was medicine. I wanted to be a doctor. So then I got to know about UMass because I had the opportunity to visit Tapa. And my dad was like, okay, why don't we also look at UMass?
Okay.
Although it was really hard to come by the money, I had to sell pastries after to raise the money to be able to get buy an admission form. So I was able to raise some money to buy that of Tech. And then because I wanted to go do medicine at Tech, that was the only school I knew. And then I knew Legon, but during my time, we were all like, yeah, Tech is the school that, like, if you did science, that is the school that you look out for. So I bought Tech, and then later my dad was like, if you've gotten some money, why don't you also look at UMass? I wasn't so much interested in the engineering. But at some point, seeing all these buses with just one lady coming out or even no lady coming out, there has to be something done about this.
Yeah.
I'm going to do engineering. I have to challenge myself to do this. So I got admission. The admission for UMass came in earlier. So I was like, okay, I'm just going for it. And I believe in God so much. Growing up, God has been part of my life, my family and everything. So I pray a lot, and instead of, although I was looking for KNUS to come in faster, but you, Matt, came in. And I had been praying about it, but I was like, okay, I'll just take it. My instincts was telling me just go. And then also I had also developed the interest to just go and then also be among the ladies who are in engineering so that I can motivate the younger ones out there that, yeah, you can also do engineering. So I really didn't know what I was going to do. Engineering. Mm-hmm. I knew about environmental engineering, so that was what I chose. And they told me, because of your results, we are going to give you mechanical engineering because we think you'll do very well in mechanical engineering. I was like, okay, because I knew that mechanical engineering was for guys, like lifting of machines and machine parts. I really didn't know anything about it. So, but yeah, that was why I went into engineering, to motivate the younger ones out there to also go into engineering. Yeah.
So tell us about your journey as a mechanical engineering student at UMAT. Since you went into a field you had no idea of, how did you survive? What are some challenges you went through? What do you think it was one of the best decisions you made? And how has it impacted you even to date?
Okay, so I see myself as a strong girl, but when I started the mechanical engineering, at some point I almost gave up because I did general science in secondary college, and it was more geared towards the health sector. Okay, so you don't do any technical courses. So like my class was filled with students from these technical schools in Ghana, like Koforidua Sec-Tech, Ghana Secondary Technical School.
The
and they knew what they were about, okay? The first day that I went to class, it was like I was just looking into the air. I didn't know what was going on in the class. So, yeah, at some point, like almost my first year, second semester, I almost gave up because of the classes. And I was this quiet type. I go to class and I sit at the back. I don't talk to anyone. So my first semester was kind of hectic. I just thought it was like that of the secondary school that you can study on your own and just do everything. But no. My first semester didn't go that way. Like when I saw my grade, I was so sad. And even in the university, my dad will be asking you about your grades.
You have to show your results to him.
Yeah, my dad. So yeah, I was really sad. I didn't know how to go tell my dad. But then I realized that it's not like the senior high school where you can do things alone yourself. You need to talk to people. You need to ask. Asking doesn't hurt. So you need to ask people. I think in my class, we were about 56. And then out of that 56, we had only 8 girls for the mechanical engineering class. So I just realized that I had to ask people. I had to ask the people who know, who understand what they are doing. Because I just didn't want to get the grades I got in my first semester again. And I'm that person, I developed this habit that no, I'm not going to quit. No, this is not the time to quit. So yeah, I just said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to ask people for help to direct me. Yeah, so what I did was talk to some of the people who were very good in the technical side, who understood what was going on in the class. And then I started picking up very fast. Like we had a study group. My study group, I was the only lady in the study group. So like we studied together and everything. Sometimes I have migraines. So sometimes they were watching me. I have to sleep. And then they will continue studying. And when it's time for me to wake up, they'll make sure they wake me up to study. So especially during examination time. So it was kind of really difficult, and coming from a poor background, it wasn't that easy for me. As I earlier said, I had to sell pastries to be able to get money for the admission forms. And the same thing for money for my school fees. And then my dad supported with some parts. And then I have a cousin who is a priest who also supported me to go to school, like get the admission fees. So when I got to school, yeah, I had to also continue selling the pastries to be able to survive. So my mom would bake the pastries from Axim and then send it to me through a car. Mm-hmm. And then I just sell it on campus. When I'm going to school, I pack some into a bag and then take it to class. Mm-hmm. And then I had to develop an idea of giving it to my colleagues in other hostels to sell it. And then sometimes during the weekend, I just move to hostel, like, and then sell it. After that, I send the money to my mom. My mom send me, if I need money, she'll send me some parts for food, and then she use the rest to continue making pastries. So that was how I survived in the university. And it was kind of hard sometimes coming from that background, but yeah, we had to move on because this is what we want to do. So yeah, these are some of the challenges I faced trying to study in a field that I had no idea about. And then also coming from a poor background, how to sell pastries. But yeah, I learned a lot of lessons from that, and that has really helped me in some parts managing my time, multitasking and everything. So yeah, that was it.
Yes, and I've realized I've just been smiling all through, like, you talking about, because I'm amazed. Because where you have gotten to now, for someone to actually get to know your background and where you are from, you didn't have it easy at all, but you are here today. And I'm actually glad you are sharing this, because for all you know, someone is going through something, the same thing you are going through, you know. Yes, so I think I would like you now to just tell us about one biggest factor that has helped you to be successful growing up amidst all these challenges you face, okay?
So one biggest factor is at the age of 10, I traveled to Accra with my mom to visit her sister, and I met my cousin of the same age, but she was brilliant and like very fluent in English. Like the knowledge gap was really huge. So like she used to participate in those programs, like television programs. And at some point, when she even introduced me to her friends, I just couldn't talk. Like the English wasn't coming. Even if it wanted to come, like my English wasn't that good. So like I just couldn't talk to her friends. And then also her father was used to work in the ministry, like the government, one of the government agencies. So sometimes you get some of the ministers of state coming around to visit the house. So these ministers, I used to see them on television, and I thought that they were just images. So we didn't have television at that time. So I just go and peep in someone's window and then watch, especially during the news. People talk about the news. We are all watching this television. But then I didn't think that they were real human beings, okay? So getting to see them, especially the women, motivated me. And then also realizing that I couldn't even talk to my cousin's friends when she introduced me to them. Like, she also was like, yeah, her cousin is in. She's from Axim. So she's just going to introduce me to every one of her friends. Here am I. I just can't talk. I just stare at them because I just couldn't talk. I get shocked when I meet them when they start talking. So I just stand there and stare. So on my way back to Axim at that tender age, what was just running in my mind is like, why is it that those of us in Axim are also not getting these chances? Why can't I speak fluent as she did? Like, she says some things that I don't even know about them. I had zero knowledge about them. So was like, I have to work, get enough money, and then support myself. And then one day, I also have to try and then help the teenagers in Axim. So that we can also get to where she is. We can also be like the ministers of state and all those stuff. We can also get money and all those stuff. So that was just what came in mind. And that is what has kept me going. Like, be able to get to a place that I'll be able to help the teenagers in Axim and other parts of Ghana. So, and then also another factor is that just growing up, I got siblings. So now my siblings look up to me. And having like four siblings, they all look up to you. Sometimes it puts pressure on me, but sometimes too, it makes me do the right, and always it makes me do the right thing that, yeah, they are looking up to you. So you have to make sure you set some standards that they can follow. So my siblings, and then being able to get to the point or a stage that I'll be able to help the teenagers in Axim. And then as I moved on learning a lot, I got to know that it shouldn't just be only Axim. Like, wherever I find myself, I should be able to help a teenager who needs it. Sometimes, even here in the US, I meet some of the Ghanaians. I met a lady, she's a Ghanaian with her children in Montana. And I don't know, it just comes like that. I start talking to the kids. What are you doing? What do you want to do in future? Okay, I'm here. If you have any questions, come ask me. I'll help out. So it just comes like that. And sometimes if I'm there and I realize, okay, the whole week, what have I done to help a teenager out there? Have I done anything? If I've not done anything, I just don't feel comfortable. So yeah, that is me. And that is what keeps me going. So
Justina, this is really amazing. What you just said is connected to my next question, which is, you are the founder of Teen Lead Foundation, okay? Yeah. So what is the inspiration behind Teen Lead Foundation? And then what are some projects you've embarked on since its inception? We'd like to know when you started and why you did.
Okay, so as I earlier said, the passion to help teenagers, and then also like basically to help them achieve their career goal in any way that I can. So this has been with me since the age of 10. So after the University of Mines and Technology, I was lucky and was posted to a mining company, Goldfields Ghana Limited, for my national service. And you know, these private companies pay well than that of the government institutions. Mm-hmm. So whilst there, I saved up the money that from my allowance, because I just go to work from like 5 a.m. to sometime I get back home like 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. And I just eat breakfast and then lunch and I'm okay. I just save my money with the objective that, okay, now I'm working. Okay, although it was just my national service, but I saw it as a job. So now I'm working, what can I do? I want to help the teenagers, what can I do? So I decided to register a nonprofit organization to start these programs for the kids. So that is how come after 1 year, like I started in 2015. So in 2017, I was able to register the nonprofit. Yeah, you know, in Ghana, I started the registration process in 2016 and then I got my certificate in 2017. So
I know we did.
I got the certificate. I was like, okay, here we go. I have to do something. But even at that time, I didn't have much money for the program I wanted to organize. So I started talking to my bosses. Okay, this is what I have in mind. This is what I want to do. And please, can you help me out? So on our way to work, I start making noise in the buses. Oh. I just talked to the driver. Okay, I have an announcement to make. Please give me permission to talk to the people. Then I talk to them. Okay, this is what I want to do. This is my passion. So could you please help me out? This is the amount I have and I need help. So if you can help me out. So some of them just willingly contributed and then helped me out. And then I spoke to one other, I think Freddie Blay, Honorable Freddie Blay, about it. I got to meet him. So I went to the radio station in Axim, Uncle Bra radio station in Axim, and then talked to them that this is what I want to do, but I don't have money. I need help. And one of them told me, okay, there is a program in Ekwe. It's also in the Nzema area. Okay. And this person is coming. So I think it would be better we go so that you go meet him and then talk to him about the project. He also thinks about the youth in Nzema. I said, okay. So we went and then he introduced me to him. I talked to him and he was like, okay, I'll try and see what I can do to help you. So he also gave me some money and then I added to all what I have. And then I went to ask him to organize the program. Like, so that was where I got the motivation to establish a non-profit organization. So I'm like, okay, then I'm going to start in Axim. So we launched the non-profit in Axim. And then I talked to my uncle who also, I actually didn't know him. I got to know him when I went to the university. He was like, seriously, an Axim kid or like a teenager from Axim studying mechanical engineering in humans? That is so, that like he hasn't heard anything like that. And like me being a girl, he was very shocked. So he was like, okay, what do you want? What do you want me to help you with? Okay, I want you to come and help me with this program. So if you can, he was like, okay, I will come. So Mr. Theophilus Anaman, since day one of Teen Lead Foundation, has been very helpful. I didn't know anything about like organizing programs a lot, but although I've been the National Ladies Commissioner of Pax Romana, organizing programs, but this one was different. So I had to deal with the schools individually, GES and everything. So he helped a lot, gave me direction on how to go about it. And at that time, my siblings were like, John Paul was 18 and Adelaide was in junior high school. But then I was like, yeah, the three of us are going to do this together.
So, carry them alone.
Yeah, they helped me out. And my family, like my mom and dad, have also been helpful. At some point, my dad didn't want me to, like, he was always like, you have to hide yourself. You have to hide yourself. You know this tradition back in Ghana with our parents, you have to hide yourself. But it got to a time he was like, no, this is what you want. You have passion for this. So, yeah, just tell me what you want to do and like I will help you in any way. So just organization, parking, things and everything. My dad will be there arranging seats and everything. My dad will be there.
Amazing.
Arrange everything. So that was how come I was able to organize the first program. I don't know if I've answered your question.
You have. So I know you were at Montana Tech too for a while. So how was the experience, the Montana Tech of University of Montana? Mm-hmm. How was the experience? How did you get there in the first place and how was the experience?
So after school, working in the mining company, I just wanted to stay there and work, you know, for seeing the prospects in working in the mining company. I was like, yeah, I just stayed there. But one of my professors, Dr. Bansa, he's currently in Missouri. Mm-hmm. He was like, no, you have to move. Don't stay there. Mm-hmm. You have to move. At first, when he started saying that, I just didn't want to listen. Mm-hmm. I was a volunteer for his nonprofit, mining and community research.
Okay.
So we used to go to the villages or areas affected by mining activities. Sometimes when they blast, they do blasting, it affects their buildings. And then also illegal mining affects their water bodies and stuff. And then also the children do not go to school because some of them have to go to the mining site, the illegal mining site, galamsey sites to go do galamsey and get money. Sometimes you ask the kids and they will tell you that I want to go to school, but I don't have the money. So I have to come and work here. And then after that, I'll go to school. So I always volunteered for him, go out there with him, do the research and everything. So he was like, no, you have to go to school. So he started guiding me and applying for schools and stuff. He would tell me, do this, go to Google, search for the schools that offer mechanical engineering. So I was even focusing on Australia and Canada. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, no, you also have to look at US. So I applied to Montana Tech too, and it took 2 years for me to get funded.
Two years
for me to get funding. So the first year I got admission in Australia and Canada, but without funding. Okay. And it was really hard. Like, I almost gave up. Like, I've been applying to schools, you know, the dollar rate too was high. Right. And I was just using all my allowances to apply for schools. And at some point, I almost gave up. And then the next year, I got admission from Montana Tech. So the first year, Montana Tech told me that the professor I wrote to told me that, okay, he doesn't have funding this year, so he will see if he can get funding the next year. Mm-hmm. So I didn't stop emailing him. I kept on pestering him.
Just
for him to know that I'm here. So mm-hmm. please, if any funding comes up, I'm here. I'm still interested. So like when he got the funding, he just sent me an email that, yeah, they have funding, so I can come. Yeah, that was how come I got admission to Montana Tech. And being in Montana Tech has been like a great experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although my first year wasn't that easy, like with this language barrier. Yeah, we speak English, but we speak the British English.
English, yeah.
In Ghana. And sometimes when they talk, you don't understand. And when you talk, that's worse. They won't understand anything. So yeah, it was kind of difficult for me. And like my first semester at some point, like, when we started classes, you go to the class and you sit beside someone, the person will stand up and go and sit at another place. Yeah, that was my first semester experience, but it got to some parts and they changed. We're all together, studying together, doing assignments together. And yeah, it was very nice. And like the community in Butte itself is amazing. The people of Butte, Montana are really amazing. Like, I found myself in the Catholic Church and like they welcomed me very well, like directing me in what to do sometimes. And I also started reading in church. So like I was even surprised they gave me the chance to read in church. But yeah, it was nice. It was a nice experience in Butte, Montana. So yeah.
Now let's move to your engineering journey so far. What has been the challenge as a female? Because for now you are a PhD student, and I don't know how many more years you have to be a full-fledged doctor. So that means you'll be a doctor in mechanical engineering and then agricultural biotech. or what's your specialty besides, or that is it?
Okay, so for Montana Tech, when I got to Montana Tech, I decided to change to environmental engineering.
Whoa, so yeah. You've changed now.
I was admitted as a mechanical engineering student.
Okay.
So working in the mining company, I developed the interest in environmental engineering. Like, I had to represent the mine for an intermine first aid and safety competition.
Mm-hmm.
So with that one, I had to study the environmental laws and regulations of Ghana, and then also study the safety aspects of working in the mine and everything. So just that 6 months, I learned a lot, and I developed the interest to help protect the environment. And then also going out there and then seeing how illegal mining is affecting Ghana so much, I was like, yeah, I have to do something to help my country. So I don't know if it's changing, but 2017, when I was leaving Ghana, the rivers in Ghana were very bad looking, like River Pra, River Nkobra, God. Like, the rivers looked miserable. To me, that's the word I would use, because of illegal mining. So I was like, I have to play a part in helping us recover from this land degradation and then this illegal mining stuff. So when I got here, I went to class for 2 weeks, but I went back and told my advisor, yeah, this is what is happening. I have to talk. So my interest in mechanical engineering has shifted to environmental engineering, and this is it. This is why. And he was like, okay, I'm here to help. I'm here as your advisor. He was the one who gave me the funding, Dr. Bruce Madigan. And he was like, okay, we'll go talk to the environmental engineering department. If there is a spot for you, you can go. And you can keep the funding for 1 year. Mm. I was like, I'm so, so much thankful to this man. I'm so much thankful to him. And I always say that. So I kept the funding from mechanical engineering while studying in environmental engineering for 1 year before the environmental engineering department got me funded. So that was how I moved from mechanical to environmental engineering. And yeah, so it's going to be a master's in environmental engineering. And I also studied ecological restoration. So trying to restore the environment at the same time. So I have a master's certificate in ecological restoration. So I had two advisors, Dr. Robert Pa and then Dr. Katrin Zodro. So one from biological science and one from environmental engineering, because of my research. I had to do a research to help restore areas affected by mining activities in Butte, Montana, and then Anaconda. So these areas do not have vegetation. So I had to try and then find ways of getting vegetation establishment in these areas. And I'm glad we were able to do that. So yeah. So it's environmental engineering, master's in master's certificate in ecological restoration. And currently I'm studying agriculture, biosystems, and mechanical engineering. So why I chose this field is that my research is more on wastewater management. So I have done the soil part, so I want to know more about the water aspect. The
water aspect.
Yeah, so currently that is what I'm doing. Yeah, trying to grow algae for wastewater treatment, and then also for phosphorus and then other nutrient removal from wastewater. Yeah.
Wow. So let's say, I'm actually happy that when you went to the US, you actually didn't forget about the reason you went out there, okay? In that you came back to embark on a project in Edukrom, okay? So how was that project and how successful were you and how is it going now? Are you done with it? Are there other projects you are looking at?
Can you repeat the question?
Okay. So I'm actually happy you came back to Ghana to come and help society, okay? You embarked on a project in Edukrom, okay? So I'd like to know how successful you were, how Edukrom is doing now with your project, if there are other projects you embarked on here in Ghana, which we do not know of, you could give us a gist of it.
So I actually didn't come to Ghana.
Wow.
I've not been to Ghana since I came to the US. So
how were you able to do it then?
With the Edukrom, my younger siblings, Adelaide and Fidelia, wanted to attend this Life Link Model United Nations program in Ghana, in Accra. So as part of the program, you could look around your locality or your community. If there is any problem that you can solve, then you start working on it. So my siblings got to know about Edukrom, that Edukrom doesn't have clean water. Mm-hmm. Like the wells they were drinking from were very bad. I was kind of surprised, at the same time not surprised. Now, surprised in the sense that I was expecting that one to be solved by now, okay? And not surprised in the sense that when I was little, we were also drinking from same wells like that in Axim. So my siblings were like, okay, we want to help this community. So they went to present their project at the Model United Nations program, but unfortunately, their project wasn't selected. Mm-hmm. Now some nonprofits came in, they were like, this is our contact. We will be glad to help Edukrom get water. So just call us. And you know Ghana, they started calling them and they didn't get any good feedback. My sisters turned to me, they were like, these people need water and you need to help. We don't know how you're going to do it, but you need to help. I'm like, geez, this is not part of my goal in life. I don't know how I'm going to help these people. So it took me about 3 months thinking of ways to help them, because I'm also a student here. And I'm not working apart from being a research assistant. That is what I am here. I'm a student. So, okay, I just couldn't handle it anymore. I had been praying about it. God, give me some directions, because I don't know how to go about this. So one day I went to church, and then after church, I spoke to one of the church members, showed her the videos of the current wells. And she was kind of shocked. Mm-hmm. And she was like, okay, my advice, let's try and then do some fundraising. I'm in. I will help you do the fundraising. So, and then let's see if I can talk to some people. So it's like everyone you show the video to, they're like, okay, I'm ready to help. Mm-hmm. What do you want me to do? Okay, so I remember she asked me to meet her in the gym. And then we're just talking on the counter, when the gym instructor, like the one of the people who works at the gym, she was also sitting at the counter. She heard us talking about the project. And she was like, oh, can I ask a question? What are you people talking about? And I showed him the videos, told him, and he's like, I'm in. I want to help. So it's like, we got about 10 people. And from these 10 people, only one has been in Ghana. The rest do not know anything about Ghana. But they said, okay, we want to help these people get water. So what we did is they suggested a fundraising. So like, and they were all older than me. So I was just following their lead, following their directions, what I'm supposed to do to get money to help Edukrom get clean water. So they suggested a GoFundMe page online, and then also a fundraising in Butte, Montana. So we started working on it, and then we organized the fundraising in Butte, Montana, and then also we got some money from the GoFundMe. And yeah, it was a great like initiative and a very good program. Yeah, so that was how come we got Edukrom water. So I was here in US talking to my family back in Ghana. So they got a contractor with the help of my brother's boss. His name, my brother's boss is Mr. Edumwa Samuel Edumwa. He also works at African World Airlines. So he was like, yeah, I like this and I would want to help. So he also came on board. So those in Ghana who were supervising the project was Mr. Edumwa, John Paul, my brother, and my dad. They were the ones supervising the project in Edukrome. So whenever they need money, whenever they get to a point that they need the money, I talk to the committee that this is where they've gotten to, this is how much they need, and they are using it for this, this, this. So like you need to be transparent if people have decided to help you. So I try to be much transparent as I can. So in the end, we're able to get a do from the clean water. But yeah, my siblings had to put a lot of pressure on me to get these people water. So, but it's really fulfilling. And although this wasn't part of my goal, but I thank God we're able to do it for them. And yeah, they have two wells now, like boreholes now, and they are doing well. So yeah, we thank God. Yeah, sometimes I'm like, my brother, I'm planning to let my brother go there, just go and check without talking to anyone and see how the place is doing. So yeah.
Justina, you are doing amazing. Thank you for not turning a deaf ear to them, because they could have reached out and you'd have just been, okay, this is not part of my project, so, or this is not part of what I want to do, and could have just turned a deaf ear. But you helped them, and then today so many people have benefited from what you did, from the fact that you spoke to people, you kept pushing till you got it done. So from here also, I've learned that if there's anything you have to do, you have to keep pushing, because if you should have just even said yes and just sat down doing nothing, you wouldn't have had that today. Okay, so even though you are not here today in Ghana, your name is attributed to that, you see, because for all you know, that was how I found you, you see. That's so, I was like, amazing. So I read your story and I was like, no, so many people have to get to know about you, because you are really doing amazing. So back to our women, do you think that women in STEM are doing well? And if we are or if we are not, what can we do differently as women in STEM, women in various STEM fields? Because for all you know, as you said, you were 56 in your class and only 8 of you were ladies. How can we influence more girls? How can we drag more girls alongside?
Yeah, so I think from the little that I've seen, women currently are doing well in STEM, but more needs to be done. In the sense that still in Ghana, we don't have more women in STEM. I don't know what is happening right now, but as of 2017, when I left Ghana, in my department in Goldfields, we were like only about 10 females out of about 2,000 workers.
Wow.
Yeah, like they had shifts. We had 3 shifts, but even that, you don't see a lot of women. I think we had about 2. For every shift, I think we had about 2 on the field. And then with the maintenance planners, we were only 2 ladies in the maintenance planning department. Planning department. So we're just only 2 ladies for the planning department. And we have some other ladies on the field. So I didn't see much ladies from what I know. And even the last place I left, with Daman, Goldfields Daman, I was with BCM Ghana Limited. And in the maintenance plan, the maintenance planning department, and then the mechanical workshop, I was the only, I think I was the only lady at first, because before we got about 3 ladies to join. So from my experience at that time, we didn't have much ladies in STEM in that field. But when you go to other fields like environmental engineering, geomatics and other stuff, other fields, we had ladies. So that is where I'm coming from now. But we need to get more of the young kids into STEM. And what we can do is that each of us should do well in educating them, talking to them, letting them know what STEM is, not only engineering. I mean, engineering, that's why sometimes I'm biased, but in all, we have to try and educate them. So like what we did just this year.
Yeah, I saw that.
Because of the COVID, we couldn't do much, but I'm thankful we were able to get to some of the students. So what we did was that we tried, my team and I, from Teen Lead Foundation, we thought about, okay, we can organize a STEM careers program for them. The kids do not know about the STEM careers out there. So I think that's what we can do for now. So we went out there, I got some schools in Axim, all the schools in Axim, but we couldn't get all the students because of financial issue. And then we had to follow the COVID rules too. So we got the schools to come in, and then we educated them about the various STEM careers out there through posters, through speakers who are already in the industry. And it went very well, like from their comments and like from their evaluation, even with the teacher's evaluation and everything, you can see that, no, this is a program that is really needed. it was a 2-day program. We had 14 schools in Axim. I was told the next day some of the schools called if they can come again. So that was kind of a little bit interesting. But I'm really glad my team and I were able to do that. So, yeah, we all need to do our part to talk to the kids out there. Yeah, if you cannot, everyone cannot do it as my team and I are doing currently. But even getting one person to talk to, just educating the person about the various careers in STEM and what each field does can help, can go a long way to help. So, yeah, and we are also doing this mentor and mentee session. We took their contact numbers and then the names of all the students. So we plan on each of us mentoring them. And then the resource persons who also came agreed to mentor them. So, yeah. That is the way we are going to do it. But in all, we all need to do our part to help these kids get to know more about STEM. Because I believe STEM is the foundation for the development of every country, including Ghana. So yeah, and Ghana needs that a lot. So yeah.
Ghana needs STEM, according to Augustina. So Augustina, what's one practical advice you have for any lady or anyone listening to us now? Because I'm sure someone just like me will be inspired by your story, because getting to know you're from Axim, you had to sell pastries, you managed to get to UMAT to pursue mechanical engineering. Like, the journey has been wow. Okay, so what would you tell ladies out there, ladies who are virtually giving up, or people who are yet to start up, or even the gentlemen, because I know some of them even listen to this podcast? What do you have to tell them?
So what I will say is that whatever you set your eyes on to do, whatever goal you set for yourself, you can do it. So you can do it with determination. You can do it with perseverance. Like, there are a lot of obstacles that will come your way, but you do not have to give up. You just have to look at the big picture. What is it going to do for me? How is it going to help the people around me? How is it going to help my country? Okay, so you just have to look at the big picture. I'm not saying you're not fit, but I try to pull through. So looking at the big picture. Just look at the big picture and then know that people are also depending on you. People are looking at you. You are people's role models. You will never know. People are just looking at you and then learning from you. So, yeah, that doesn't put the pressure on you. But that really helps you to like move on, be disciplined, and try to go through whatever obstacles that will come your way. And those Christians or Muslims, never forget your creator, never forget your God. I've always relied on God in every aspect of my life. Sometimes I slack a bit with my religious life. I just focus on school too much, but yeah, God can help you in every aspect of your life. Just trust in him, pray, and then do your part. Do not say, no, God is going to do this, so I'm not going to work. No, it doesn't work that way anywhere. He gave you the wisdom, the knowledge to do everything. So work and then pray to him for direction and then wisdom. Yeah. So that's what I will say.
Thank you. Thank you, Augustina. Oh, too soon. We've come to the end. And anytime I am about to end the podcast, I'm so sad because like I want to continue, but time will not permit us. Thank you so much, Augustina, for honoring the invitation. Thank you for sharing your story. And as I keep saying, I know someone is definitely going to be inspired by this. I'm going to put this out there also. If you have any more questions for Augustina, just reach out to me. I'll get them to her. So she puts out the answer, then I'll get back to you, okay? So there is, once again, we've come to the end of a fourth episode of season 2 of What's Your Story. As you listen, don't listen to it alone, okay? Share it, share, okay? So that someone can also get impacted as well. Don't keep all the knowledge, you know, share it, okay?